The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Kogal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Glamour Magazine's December and January issue, 17 Magazine, and we're going to start off with the Do You Know What Day Tomorrow Is? Two big days close to today, which is the 25th of January. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. Well, welcome back, everyone. I'm glad that we're here together again. And I wanted to start off today by reading something that happened on yesterday in 1832. That is January 27, 1832. That was the birth date of Lewis Carroll. Lewis Carroll's real name was Charles Ludwig Dodgson. He taught mathematics at Oxford University. He used the pen name Lewis Carroll when he wrote Alice's Adventures in Wonderland in 1865 and Through the Looking Glass, 1872. The adventures of Alice evolved from his telling stories to a real Alice, Alice Liddell, a daughter of a devoted friend. One Christmas, he wrote and illustrated the story as a gift to her. Years later, the story was issued in book form with Sir John Tenniel's famous illustrations. Today, such characters as the White Rabbit, the Cheshire Cat, and the Mad Hatter are as fresh as when they first appeared. Have you ever told a story to someone? And it went on, and it kind of evolved. Maybe it's time to write it down. All right. The second event that occurred today, January 28th in 1986, is not as uplifting, sadly. One of the worst and most tragic accidents in space history took place on this date, January 28th, when the Challenger spacecraft exploded just after takeoff. The seven astronauts who perished were Francis R. Scobie, Michael J. Smith, Robert E. McNair, Ellison S. Onizuka, Judith A. Resnick, Gregory B. Jarvis, and Sharon Krista McAuliffe, the first teacher to go into space. McAuliffe, a high school social studies teacher from Concord, New Hampshire, was chosen from 10,463 applicants to be the first private citizen to go into space. President Ronald W. Reagan's announcement on August 27, 1984, that a school teacher would be selected for this honor, galvanized McAuliffe into action. She stated her reasons for applying in her application essay, quote, "This opportunity to connect my abilities as an educator with my interest in history and space is a unique opportunity to fulfill my early fantasies," end quote. And that happened January 28th, 1986. All right, well, we're going to go on with our series from Glamour, entitled How to Take Your 2018 Up a Level, and we're going to continue with Level 3. All right, last week and the week before, we talked about Level 2 and Level 1, respectively, and we're going to just, you know, take it up a level to Level 3, and this is the final level. So, our first entry under that is Get Your Finances Together. How to do that? I want to be really clear, says Alexa Von Tobel, CEO and founder of personal finance website LearnVest. Women aren't worse with money than men. That said, money is one of those things we often worry about. It's just a tool. The sooner you get comfortable handling your finances, the better. Follow Von Tobel's five simple steps to better financial health. And there's a really cool picture here. It's, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So 49, like our contiguous United States. 49 quarters, 7 to the right, 7 to the left, so columnar and going down in columns. And they are all in different colors, kind of the Roy G. Biv colors. Step one, create a plan. Think of your plan as a complete roadmap of your life and everything you want to accomplish and need money for. I recommend working with an advisor to get a full financial picture, particularly because they'll hold you accountable. Having no plan is a plan. It's just a really bad one. Step two, commit to a budget. A guiding principle I love is the 50 to 20 to 30 rule, though your personal budget may need some wiggle room. Essentially, 50% of your money each month should go to essentials, housing, groceries, etc. 20% should go to your future, saving for a home, kids' college, etc. And then 30% or less is lifestyle, eating out, vacations, etc. To stick to it, automate as much as you can. Step three, start a retirement fund. This is a must-have. It's vital that you prioritize creating and contributing to a retirement fund, particularly in your early 20s and 30s, because compounding interest will do a lot of the hard work for you if you start early. Go to your HR department to increase your contribution to your 401k by 2 percentage points today and try to reach the maximum contribution. Step four, keep an emergency savings fund. Any smart woman has an emergency fund that's 3 to 9 months of pay. That's where part of the 20% savings portion of your budget should go. It's there for you if you lose your job, get sick, have a serious catastrophe, real emergencies. They happen all the time. Keep this money in a savings account, separate from your checking account. Step five, tackle your debt. All debt is not equal. It's bad when, like credit card debt, it doesn't help you in the long term and grows quickly, and good when it's an investment in future earning power, such as a student loan. Put as much money as you can toward credit card bills first, starting with the highest interest rate one. Note that this payment should come before lifestyle spending. Once that's paid off, prioritize the next highest interest rate debt, and so forth, and then move to the good debt. As with anything else in life, the more you really handle money, the better you'll end up doing with it. And this is by Kate Friedman. And there's a life hack right here. Quote, at the end of the day, I make a gratitude list by writing down a few things I'm thankful for. It lowers stress levels and gives you a greater sense of calm at night. And that is by Arianna Huffington, founder of Thrive Global. All right, we have another article, How to Stand Out at Work. Whether you're gunning for a promotion at your 9-to-5 or trying to bolster your side hustle, it often feels impossible to make your mark. But fear not, Renee Mabornie, co-author of Blue Ocean Shift, Beyond Competing, Proven Steps to Inspire Confidence and Seize New Growth, has helped companies around the world stand out, and she'll share how you can too. Define your career objective. Ask yourself, what do I love to do? And answer honestly. Go for the job you know you'll enjoy, as opposed to the career that seems enviable. If you're passionate, you'll be willing to put in the work, and then you'll be capable of almost anything. Shift from competing to creating. Most people look at what their peers are doing and then try to do it better. When you do this, competition sets your agenda, which in turn leads to imitation, not innovation. Instead, focus on doing things differently from everyone else. Eliminate actions that don't help you get ahead. So much of what we do adds little value to our lives, yet takes up a tremendous amount of our time. Rather than add more to your plate in hopes of standing out, think, of the things I'm currently focused on, what can I eliminate to create space for something that would make a big impact? Build your army. Most people view the professional world as a win to lose. My win is someone else's loss. But all else being equal, the person who has the most coworkers cheering for them often becomes the one who gets promoted. If you're helping others do well, you become more valuable to them, which will have a positive impact on you. Then it's not just you pushing for your success. You'll have a whole army of people behind you. All right, and the next one, how to get VIP status, and then in parentheses, as a plebe. Some of us are VIPs, and some of us are getting there. But there's no reason to not get special treatment while you're hustling. You just have to game the system. It's easier than you'd think. To skip the line and walk straight into a bar or club, never get directly in the line, says Adam Santos Coy, a nightlife veteran who's been in the business as a doorman at clubs in Los Angeles and New York City for 7 years. Always walk to the front and don't walk up like you're worried. You shouldn't be. We're not saving whales here. Find the doorman and make a request, such as, "Hi, there's three of us. We want to go in and have a drink." If they tell you there's a line, nicely ask, "Is it a long line?" And if it's more than 10 minutes, politely let them know that you'll go somewhere else. Then they may signal that you'll get in by saying something like, "It's moving fast." But if you don't get in, don't make a thing about it. We'll remember that. To snag the best hotel room, call ahead to confirm your reservation, says Jacob Tomsky, author of Heads in Beds, a reckless memoir of hotels, hustles, and so-called hospitality. And make sure you get a front desk agent and not a general reservation center. Single yourself out from the huge mass of other check-ins by asking for the agent's name so you can find them at check-in to give them a $20 bill. When you do that, say, "This is for you. Thank you for your help. Whatever you can do for me to get the best room, an ocean view, whatever you want, I'd appreciate it." And don't be shy about it. There is no better look than tipping someone. If you're on a tight budget, there are things you can say that front desk agents rarely hear, like, I know it's busy today. I appreciate your taking the time to help me with this reservation." That can really put you on the good side of an agent, and they're the ones choosing your room. FYI, our tester used these tips and got a room upgrade and free room service. Try them. And finally, to get a suite reservation at an impossible restaurant. It seems really easy, but the nicer you are, the more the host will go out of their way to get you a table, says Amanda Cohen, executive chef and owner of famously hard-to-get-into NYC restaurant Dirt Candy. If you come to the door and start questioning the reservationist, it's not going to get you anywhere. And even if the restaurant isn't taking any more bookings that night, if you're just really friendly and hanging around and say, "Maybe I'll grab a drink at the bar, but let me know if anything opens up," you're more likely to get a table. And then if you enjoyed your experience and want to go back, send the staff a note the next day. "I can't even tell you how much it means to us. We're glad we did a good job by you, and we'll want to do it again." And that is ALG and CD. Okay, our next article is How to Bias-Proof Your Resume. According to one study, recruiters spend about 6 seconds reading a resume, which, unfortunately, is still long enough for their biases to creep in. Here's how to make those 6 seconds count. Front-load your strengths. If you're worried about landing a long-term job because you've had short-term stints, put your strongest accomplishments in a summary at the top. Ahead of your listed work experience, says Wendy Weiner, career branding expert. By the time a recruiter reads your experience, they'll already be sold on your skills. Avoid gendered language. Women use fluffier verbs that undersell their value, like assisted and participated, while men use led and generated, says Christy Russo, CEO of Red Letter Resumes. Especially in male-dominated fields, this may cause employers to decide you aren't a fit. So own your work. Be cautious of listing activities. Think through including religious and political associations. An employer may make assumptions, says Russo. Unless that item demonstrates qualifications, for example, one of my clients was involved with the Democratic National Convention, says Weiner, and we kept that on her resume because it connected to her skill set, which was policymaking. And finally, seek platforms that mitigate bias. If you're looking in an industry where people like you are underrepresented, use job matching services focused on connecting diverse talent with companies like JopWell, and that's JOPWELL, and Blendor, BLENDOOR, which removes bias-eliciting data. Think name, age, photo. We're demonstrating that talented people of color and women do exist, says Stephanie Lampkin, Blendor's founder. Amen. All right. And here is another article, How to Beat Imposter Syndrome. After dropping out of college, Deisha Dyer, 39, worked her way from hip-hop reporter to White House social secretary with plenty of jobs in between. We'll let her tell it. And this is her quote. I went to college at 17, but left because I was flunking and couldn't afford it. I got a secretary job back home in Philadelphia, and while it wasn't my dream job, I also worked on projects that fed my interest in social work and wrote for a friend's hip-hop website to satisfy my creative side. My advice? If your job isn't your passion, look for opportunities, even volunteering, that feel like who you are. I eventually enrolled in community college. When Barack Obama was running, I put a photo of him on my desk and joked, I'm going to work for him. Then I saw an ad for a White House internship and thought, can I do this? I wrote down everything I'd been through and accomplished, an eviction, going back to school, and realized, I got this. My advice? List the things you did when you thought you couldn't do them. You'll be amazed. And don't stress about whether you're qualified, quote-unquote, for a job. Show your skills and go for it. I got the internship, and after it ended, the White House emailed about a position in the scheduling department. The imposter syndrome, I felt, was real even after I got the job. I didn't go to the right school or dress the right way. I'm a Goodwill thrift shopper. But I made sure my work was always on point, so the extras didn't matter. When I became social secretary, I was still hard on myself. Washington had never seen someone like me in the role. I'm a black woman from a broken home with a nose ring, who talks like she's from Philly. I wasn't completely confident, and I got mad at myself for not knowing things I hadn't been exposed to. I doubted myself, but I couldn't let that stop me from asking for help if I didn't know something. The President and First Lady also poured positivity into me and made me feel comfortable. After my team and I nailed 3 big events within a 6-day span, I was like, y'all can't tell me, S-H-I-T. I didn't care what anyone said about me anymore. My advice, identify what you're great at, trust your team, and things will fall into place. While planning the Pope's 2015 visit to the White House, I said, I want black people to sing for the Pope. I hired a local black church choir and saw the importance of bringing myself to the job. I've gone on to become a speaker and event consultant and started an organization for girls. Over the years, I struggled to feel worthy in my roles, but the ultimate lesson I took away is external voices are always going to make you feel like you can't. Silence them. If I think those things about myself, I'd never move forward. I can be Disha from Philly and succeed. All right, and finally, keep track of passwords. How to do this? Few people care about password strength until they get hacked. But your parents, your roommate, and your sister's ex already have your Netflix password. You don't need a hacker getting it and further messing up your, quote, recommended shows, quote, algorithm. So, Mark Burnett, author of Perfect Passwords, Selection, Protection, Authentication, gives Glamour some password pointers. Glamour. What should I do first to improve my password game? Mark Burnett. The best thing is to download a password manager like LastPass on your phone and computer. You use one master password to get into it, and then it manages all your other passwords and can automatically fill in your logins. And when making passwords, length makes a huge difference in strength. Add chunks of data like 1 to 800 or .com to the beginning or end. It's easier to remember. Glamour. A friend told me one of her passwords is pussypower69. Is it helpful to use outrageous words? Mark Burnett. It's actually a good technique. You'll definitely think before sharing it. You can also make it a confession you wouldn't want anyone to know. Glamour. Any rookie mistakes? Mark Burnett. Replacing characters with symbols like a with at sign or O with a zero. It's common and trivial to crack. Glamour. I guess the number 2, B-E, or not with an O, with a zero, but for the O, to be, will always lead to tragedy. And I'm going to end with an article from This, I Believe. Actually, it's not an article. It's an essay. Have I learned anything important since I was 16? And this is by Elizabeth Deutsch Earl. Over 50 years ago, at the age of 16, I wrote an essay published in the original This I Believe series. Since then, I've advanced through much of the life cycle, including college, marriage, to the same man for over 40 years, 2 daughters, plus a scientific career, 2 lively grandsons, and death of parents and friends. I still believe most of what I wrote long ago. Many of my early traits remain, including skepticism about religious authority, curiosity about the world, and the lofty desire to live a righteous life. The world I see now worries me at least as much as it did in the 1950s. So, have I learned anything important since I was 16? I now know that life is very often unfair. My own life has gone well, with much happiness and no exceptional grief or pain. yet travel to other countries, experiences closer at hand, and just reading the news shows me how hard things are for many people. The contrast troubles me, and I'm still not sure how best to respond to it. I do believe that those of us who have prospered should view our good fortune not as an indication of personal merit or entitlement, but as an obligation to recognize the needs of others. Sadly, I've fallen short of my optimistic youthful goal of, quote, doing what must be done. I try to be a good friend to the people I know and support causes with broader goals that I respect, but I recognize that my efforts have changed the world only in small ways. Being a kind person and striving for social justice remain high priorities for me, but not for religious reasons. The simple faith in the deity expressed in my teenage essay has faded over the years. Still, after the events of 9/11, I returned to the Unitarian Church, the same denomination in which I was active when I was 16. I have come to appreciate once again that communal reflection about life's deeper matters is sustaining and uplifting and provides a consistent nudge in worthy directions. I believe that it's good to spend time engaged in the present. I recently heard and admired the phrase, "Wherever you are, be there." This may not work for everyone. Dissociating from misery may be wise, but someone like me, who focuses on lists of the next day's tasks and often reads a newspaper while walking outdoors, should remember also to look up at the sky and at the people around me. I believe that it's important to recognize and appreciate joy when you feel it. Every once in a while, and not just on special occasions, I've suddenly realized that I am truly happy right now. This is a precious experience, one to savor. When I was young, an honest and moral life seemed like a straightforward goal. I now know that it's not always easy to see what should be done, and even harder, actually, to do it. Nevertheless, I'm grateful that I still have some time to keep trying to get it right and to savor each remaining day in my life. Well, I thought I would just end with that since it is January, the beginning of a new year, but we have come to the end of our program of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Annika Gall, reading from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.